Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the TE Podcast by Developing Lafayette. My name is Ben Powers. I'm your host. And what we like to do with this podcast is we like to invite different business owners, different community influencers in Lafayette Parish that really highlight Lafayette Parish and what we're all about.
Today we have a great episode. We always have a great episode. I don't think there's any episode that would be not great. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about Lafayette travel and the different things that go along with that. And today, with that, I have Ben Berthelot. I'm pretty sure there's a fancier way to say Berthelot. But Ben Berthelot, he's the president and CEO of Lafayette.travel. But I think it's also a longer thing, like commissions, something, visitors. You introduce yourself and we'll go from there.
Sure, Ben Berthelot. Although as you and I talked about Berthelo in some parts of the world. But the president and CEO of Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission, branded as Lafayette Travel. And our job is the marketing arm for Lafayette Parish and Acadiana to try to drive visitation, meetings, and conventions to our area and affect the economy in a positive light.
Okay, cool. Well, so if anybody is wondering, I guess, what Lafayette.travel does, or the Visitors Commission and the convention, all that fancy terminology. I mean, it's really pretty simple, like you said, just to be a marketing arm and to try to bring more visitors to Lafayette.
Right.
Go ahead. You were going to say something.
Yeah, we have a couple of different main functions that we do. So 30 years ago, our office was placed on the corner of Evanston Thruway and Willow, and the visitor center is a component of what we do. 30 years ago, the only way you could get information about a destination was to physically stop in or to call. A lot has obviously changed during that time, and we've seen the number of people who actually physically stop in our visitor center go down over the years, while our total visitation continues to increase, and that's the same in every destination in the world. So that's one function that we provide, and we continue to do that. And then the big piece of what we do is the communications piece. So we run a lot of advertising, print, digital media throughout the years, the largest part of our budget, trying to entice people to come to visit, a lot of special projects and sales missions and promotional shows throughout the year. And we host a lot of travel riders throughout the year, which is a big piece of what we do to get earned media for our area. And we could never afford to generated about $7 million in earned media last year, and we could never afford to place that many ads in publications because we don't have a budget that large. And in fact, we just landed the Travel Blogger Exchange for 2020, which is the world's largest travel blogger conference, and we're really excited about that. That's going to generate millions of dollars in earned media. And then the final piece of what we do is the convention and meeting part of our business, where we go out and try to attract meetings and conventions. We work very closely with the Cajun Dome and the Convention Center, although we have no oversight of them. Work closely with our hotels that are able to accommodate conventions. And then the sports market is the final piece of what we do, which has been a growing piece of what we do since the citizens of Youngsville taxed themselves for their state-of-the-art complex, and Broussard recently did the same. So our sports market is really our fastest growing segment.
Okay. Mm. Wow. So let's talk a little bit about the Travel Bloggers Exchange. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? Because that seems like a pretty big deal.
It is a pretty big deal.
Like, why wouldn't that? So how did we grab that and not some other city?
Well, it's a lot of different factors. I'll just tell you that our organization has a long history of working with travel writers throughout the years. My predecessor, Gerald Bro, was heavily involved in that. He was a member of Society of American Travel Writers. I'm now a member of Society of American Travel Writers. So we've always had a great relationship with travel writers. Travel bloggers is something relatively new. And so we've started to dip our toes into that market. We've hosted bloggers before, some pretty big bloggers. And then we actually ran into the folks of TBEX at a trade show that we attend. And we attend we attend over 50 meetings and trade shows throughout the year where we're out there promoting and selling Lafayette. And that conversation started at one of those shows, and initially it led to a site visit. And once we had them for a site visit, I felt pretty good about it because we do believe that we can get people here, we have them hooked. It's just the fact that we try to get them here, and that's what we try to do every day. So when we got them here, they fell in love with the area, and you know, we worked through the kinks of the contract, and then they announced that Lafayette will be hosting in Billings a month ago. And the convention is actually held twice a year. It's held once internationally and once domestically. So we'll be the only domestic location for 2020.
Okay, and where is it going to be hosted? I think the news has already mentioned it, but for the sake of conversation, where is it hosted?
Well, the bloggers will be staying in several different hotels. I think the DoubleTree is the host hotel. Then this convention will be hosted at the convention center. But, you know, it's not like a normal convention that people attend where you sit in a classroom and you learn. And there'll be some of that. But really, the value of having them here is they're going to be out blogging based on itineraries that we provide to them, not just in Lafayette Parish, but all throughout Acadiana. And then when they leave at the end, we'll actually work with other destinations throughout the state to send them off and cover other parts of Louisiana.
Okay. And you say the convention center. You're talking about Cajun Dome Convention Center. Okay.
Correct.
I wanted to, I guess, ask you about, since the role of Lafayette Travel is to entice conventions and everything to host in Lafayette and different things, and we got that one, that's a big one.
Right.
What about space? Because LADCO left Lafayette because they outgrew Lafayette.
Right. Yep.
What do we have to do to better accommodate big conventions? So if we want to get bigger conventions, like, for example, just throwing one out there, like a YouTube VidCon or something, that'd be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
We have Comic-Con, we have all those things, but some pretty big conventions that are happening in other parts of the country, like, we need a bigger space.
Yep, absolutely. I'm glad you asked. It's actually our number one priority. It has been for quite some time. We've done feasibility studies. A second feasibility study has been done. But our number one priority is a full-service, minimum 300-room hotel at the Cajun Dome, and then the doubling of the convention center. So you'd have meeting space in the hotel, and then obviously you'd have more meeting space in the Cajun Dome. But in the convention center. It's one of the things that when I talk to groups locally, I talk about all the time. It's a university project, I don't necessarily control it, but we spend a lot of time advocating for it. But when I go to a convention, I get out of the airplane, get into a taxi, or if I'm driving, I get out of my car. And if I never want to get back into my car, I don't have to, because the convention center's there, the hotel's there, there's restaurants. If I want to go sightseeing, I obviously take a taxi or Uber or whatever, or go to the New Trinity restaurant. So that project combined with the University Commons project, I believe, will be a game changer for tourism in our area, particularly the convention business, obviously, because all of a sudden you have that density that most convention towns have. And we get our fair share of conventions. We outkick our coverage sometimes, like T-Bex, and we hosted the National Golden Gloves Boxing Championships, which is the second largest boxing amateur event in the world, to the Olympics. So we're able to do some things, but we're not really known as a convention town because of our infrastructure. We have three full-service hotels. The Garden Plaza right now on the old Holodome has some rooms. They're renovating DoubleTree, and then you have the Wyndham. So if we're going to host a convention, we have four options. We have the DoubleTree, we have the Wyndham, we have the Garden Plaza, or we have the Cajun Dome Convention Center. And the Cajun Dome Convention Center has UL basketball, they have Mardi Gras events, they have concerts, so we have to work around all of those things. But we miss out on conventions that want to be under one roof.
Right.
And not necessarily all their attendees, but the majority of their attendees. And so the project I reference is so important, and it's so important that other hoteliers realize the importance. So hotels on Pinhook recognize that if that project is done, they're going to benefit from it, because we'll have the opportunity to get more citywides like LADCO and other conventions that will benefit everybody. You know, so you'll have the majority of your attendees on site, you'll have some shuttling from other hotels, but that's how we take our convention business to the next level. So I can't really tell you when that's going to happen. All I can tell you is it's our top priority, when you combine that with the University Commons project, which, for your listeners, if they haven't looked at that project, I encourage them to do so, because that will be a game changer. It affects the property all the way from, you know, Cajun Dome Boulevard, from Johnson all the way down to Eras Landry, with retail, residential, mixed use, all of those things. So it's a sort of density that you have in other convention towns. And the other thing I like to talk about is, you know, the distance from downtown to the Cajun Dome. We would walk that distance in any major city in America, but it's sort of would be unheard of. So the ability to connect all of that somehow, now all of a sudden you have, from a convention standpoint, that density where people can go to their meetings, walk out, go grab a bite to eat, you know, go enjoy some entertainment, all those things.
Okay. So keeping on the topic of, you know, space and conventions and all that. So one of the most popular destinations for conventions, at least to my understanding, is Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Las Vegas is obviously huge, and they have tons of convention space. But where I'm going with this is they have casinos.
Yeah.
Casinos bring in a lot of different people, and I know there's politics related to casinos and it being out of Lafayette. But what if we had a big casino resort convention center built in Lafayette, right, that could also be another avenue for convention space? Like, how hard would it be to achieve something like that? Like, for example, like a Golden Nugget.
Right. Well, I'm not advocating for that, but I will tell you, it hasn't come up much, but there have been some recent conversations, and I'll just go use Lake Charles as an example. Lake Charles, you know, just an hour down the road, before those two casinos were built, you know, their budget was lower than ours. Now they've added 1,000 rooms, and you know, when you drive into that area, it's a pretty nice area. You feel like you're in another part of the country, but what that has done for their overall area and their budget has been significant. So their budget has now surpassed ours in terms of their ability. And that's because when you have that, you have 1,000 rooms, that's a lot. But then you look at the average daily rate for those hotels, which is maybe what, $250, $300. Yeah. And now the CVB gets 4% of that for their marketing efforts. Our average daily rate somewhere around $75. And so that's how you double your budget very, very quickly. And so they've benefited tremendously from that. And I talked earlier about our ability to host different conventions and some that we miss out on. There's several that are now rotating throughout the state. And I'll use the Lieutenant Governor's Summit as an example. That used to be held in Lafayette. They continue to grow and to grow. They want to be under one roof. The board voted that they need to be under one roof. And so now that convention can only be held in New Orleans, obviously. Shreveport because of the casino. Lake Charles because of the casinos, and Baton Rouge at the Crown Plaza, which they've pretty much outgrown. So in a few years, it'll only be held in three destinations. That's an event that used to rotate all across the state. So that's one example. But you know, there is some conversation, and you're getting into a very controversial topic here. So,
look, I love controversy.
But the, you know, there is
with some, respect the, to the, you know what it is.
There is some conversation about some possible licenses coming up. So we'll certainly be paying attention to that. But what I would tell you is if the conversation ever got to that level, I would never advocate for just a boat that sat on the river.
Oh, no, definitely.
To me,
not.
That would do us no good from a convention tourism standpoint. That would just be people coming, local people coming from the Acadiana region. But if you had the ability to, let's say, just dreaming out loud where the trapeze facility is on the river, because it's going to have to be on the river or adjacent to the river to build a nice complex like the Golden Nugget, I think, then that would possibly change the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to come across like I'm advocating for a casino just in general. I can care less about the casino itself,
right,
but what the casino brings,
right,
to the city, all the visitors and the traffic, yeah. and
there's
just
no question.
It becomes a destination place.
Yeah.
I mean, just up the road, we have Evangeline Downs.
Yeah.
And they're relatively busy, and they have a few acts that come over there,
right,
that are nice.
Yeah.
It's
not just the gambling portion of it. It's,
right,
it's the entertainment.
Right. Entertainment in itself is, I think, something that Lafayette is thirsty for. Bad.
Right.
We have ample amounts of places to eat.
Mm-hmm.
If we get one more restaurant,
right,
like I don't know where, what, at what point will Lafayette be unable to support a restaurant?
Yeah, well,
like,
well, it's good for your business though. You get a report on those new
restaurants. No, it's definitely great. Look, I don't mind all the new restaurants,
right,
because those are the most liked things on the page. But we need some entertainment, mm-hmm, and thankfully we have Drew Brees building the Surge Entertainment that's bringing,
yeah,
a different type of thing. It's not just a trampoline park.
Yeah.
We have plenty of those now.
Yeah. We call that product development, and
yeah,
something that we have on our staff meeting every week is, you know, what's new out there, what's coming up that we can sell and promote. But you know, just to go back on what you were saying, obviously there was a vote of the people many years ago. I was paying attention, but not really old enough to. I don't even remember if I was in the workplace yet. But that the Lafayette Parish banned the gambling. So there was,
right,
there would have to be a lot to happen for that conversation. But it could. I will tell you, this up until this past year, I had the conversation had not even, in my 7 years in this position, I have not heard it once until this past year. And actually, one of our local hoteliers, we brought back our Motel Lodging Association, and he's the one who brought it up and is actually advocating for it. So, you know, we'll see where the conversation goes.
Well, I don't want to harp on too much on the casinos.
No, however, me either.
I did do a poll, I think a year or two ago, mm-hmm. on if the people that were following me, people of Lafayette, would like to see a casino resort come to Lafayette,
right.
similar to the Golden Nugget and right. LaBerge and whatnot. And I can't recall the exact percentage of the votes. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of votes, I think over 1,000 for sure, which is small beans parish-wide, but...
Right.
Big enough to kind of get gauge, and I believe the results were in pro of having a casino resort.
Yeah.
Now, you take it to a parish-wide vote,
right.
and then you have all the people campaigning PACs against it or
right.
whatnot.
Right.
You know, it may not fly. However, it's an interesting topic.
It is.
But let's move on. I really want to just know, where were you born and raised? Like, what are you from Lafayette or yeah. all that good stuff? Like, tell me a little bit about you.
Sure. I always say I'm born and raised in Lafayette because really I am. But my birth certificate says Marquette, Michigan. My dad was in the Air Force, and so he was stationed at KI Sawyer Air Force
Base. A Yankee, huh?
Yeah. So he was from here, went to college here, but was stationed in the Air Force. So for the first 6 months of my life, I lived in Marquette. But, you know, then they moved back home, and we've been here ever since. So. My family has been very involved in the community for many, many years. My dad was a banker and my mom a teacher, and my step-parents are both from around the area. And so it's been great.
So, yeah, you were born and raised here. I mean, 6 months of your life in Michigan, that doesn't say that you're
no.
you're a northerner
and
at
in
all.
In fact, I never even bring it up unless I'm in Michigan, and then, of course, I'm going to play to that connection.
Yeah, right. Look, guys, I'm part of you.
That's right.
This is a off-topic kind of thing. Yeah. Well, not off-topic. It's kind of... a little weird, but so there's a show, and some people may know, it's called King of the Hill, and there's an episode where Hank Hill, one of the main characters, he's from Texas. He thinks he's born and raised in Texas. He's a full-blooded Texan-American, mm-hmm. and in the episode, he gets his birth certificate, mm-hmm. and he's expecting to see born in, like, Arlen, Texas, or whatever,
right.
where the show is based, and he sees New York City. And he about dies. He's like, he calls his mom and like, why am I born in New York City? And, you know, they tell the whole story. So I think it's interesting. And it was kind of like that because he was only born there. And
right.
then they moved.
They
were, I think his mom and dad were visiting New York in,
right.
in the cartoon. But anyway.
Good.
But yeah, so cool. So you're born and raised here. And so in your opinion, what makes Lafayette so special that you want to promote it and tell people to come here? Like, what is like the sticking point for you that makes Lafayette special?
Well, for me, I mean, I was born and raised here. I majored in public relations at UL. So this is a dream job to be able to use my major and promote an area that I grew up and love. But people come here for our food, our music, our culture, the outdoors, a growing extent. But ultimately, you know, it's the people and the hospitality which make all of that happen. You know, the tastiest town of the South, the best food city in the United States, livability.com top 10 food city. We have live Cajun and Zydeco music 7 nights a week. The culture, obviously, and on the both the Acadian culture, the Creole culture, is alive and well. You can get immersed in it 7 days a week. People think they can go to New Orleans and you know, find Cajun and Zydeco, and you can, you know, sometimes, but you can't find it and get immersed in it like you can here. So that's a story we have to continue to tell. New Orleans is a great place, but this is the authentic, you know, home of the Cajun and Creole culture. And in fact, the mayor of New Orleans, I was told a couple months ago, somebody went to New Orleans and said, I want to find some Zydeco music. And she said, well, you need to go to Lafayette.
Oh, wow.
So that's a funny story. But so all those things. And the other thing that's great about our area is that, you know, visitors don't care about or understand city or parish lines. And
right,
so we really do have a great region and a lot of great product in the entire region. We sell the entire region. You know, Tabasco, obviously the number one brand in the world.
Yeah, most recognizable brand, I think, by some study I heard a while back.
Yeah, and they've done some great things with their new visitor experience. We had the Atchafalaya Basin, the world's, the North America's largest swamp. You know, you have Brobridge doing some great things with Zydeco Breakfast and all of those things. And Arnoldville, what they're doing at New News and great little restaurants in Bayou Teche Brewery, you know, in Vermilion Parish. So all around the entire area is somebody's coming to our area, and they may be staying in Lafayette, but they're not just staying within the city or parish limits. They're going to go experience all of those things. And so from a regional standpoint, we have a great product to sell.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. It's a struggle for me, and you made a good point. It's a struggle for me to only talk about with what I do about the city or the parish, because the parish of Lafayette's great, but what surrounds Lafayette Parish help make Lafayette Parish great.
Right.
Because ultimately, those people that surround us depend on Lafayette's economy to also support them. For example, one of my my dad's favorite products. Since I was growing up, and when I was growing up, I don't think I cared for it that much, but now I'm like, I like it. Steen syrup.
Oh, I love Steens.
And it's one of those things where it's like, it's so simple, and it has this very unique flavor, and it kind of brings me back to whenever I was a child, where my grandparents, I think, gave me Steens, and I didn't know it was Steens. They probably just put it on my plate with biscuits and all that. But, and I believe they're from Abbeville, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, just that right there, and people use Steens on everything here, like all the Boudin stuff at Steens.
Yeah, the Drew Breezes at French Press
uses the Steens
on the Boudin. But yeah, that's a good point. We have a lot of great products like that in Conrico Rice Mill and Acadia Parish, and so from our standpoint, that's a good point. And so what we have to do is work with those attractions and be able to say, look, you're known all across the world, but if somebody stops in here on a Saturday morning, they're not going to stop just to look at it and say, you know, I went to a Conrico rice mill. You have to have some sort of offering that they can see, and some do and some don't. But you know, we spend a lot of time in like Holy Rosary is a great example. What a icon in our community. But up until the current plans that have been released, if you stop by Holy Rosary to learn about the history of what was done there and all the great you know, alumni they have all across the world, you couldn't experience that. And so that's an example of product development that I'm excited about, and we always need more of that. So people want to know what's new, and you have to continue to grow. And fortunately, a lot of our attractions have done that, have reinvented themselves in terms of programming. Vermilionville is a good example. They've been around for, I don't know how many years, let's say 30 years, but they constantly are evolving their programming. They have Cajun jams, and they have great programming throughout the year, cooking classes and the artisans and all of those things. So that's what we have to do to remain relevant in terms of the product.
Cool. Well, so I'm going to go ahead and update the listeners. So we are talking with Ben Berthelot. He's the president and CEO of Lafayette Travel. And if you want to know a little bit more about it, I think it's Lafayette.travel.
LafayetteTravel.com or Lafayette Travel on social media.
Okay, I don't know why I put Lafayette.travel.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It used to be Lafayette.travel.
Oh, so that's where I go. So LafayetteTravel.com. Go check them out. It's basically where visitors can come and learn a little bit about Acadiana and things to do.
Right.
So one of my next questions is, since you're born and raised here, if this ever had to happen, if you ever had to be transplanted into another city, like, I know you probably wouldn't want that, but if you had to, where would you hope to land and why?
It's a good question. And I really can't see myself going anywhere else. But in our industry, it happens quite often, is that, you know, if you're successful in an area, then the next area is going to try to, you know, get you to go and do your thing over there. And I think one of the things that makes me effective in my job is the relationships that I've developed over the years. And so obviously if you move to a new area, you start over from scratch, but I could probably do that. But I really, it would take a lot to get me to leave. You know, I have a young family, 5, 3, and 2, and everybody's here. But, you know, obviously, I get to travel a lot in my job, and what I love about that is I get to see what other communities are doing, And the communities that really excite me are the ones that have that density, like we talked about, and they have that walkability, connectivity, where you can get down and for hours be a tourist without getting in your car. And so places like that would attract me, that have the ability to go after these big conventions that you talked about. A place like Destin, Florida, which I've gone to every year.
I think everybody in Louisiana goes to Destin for
the last 30 years. You know, that would be not bad. Maybe in my retirement type year.
Somewhere near the beach.
Yeah. But I don't think it's gonna happen. But it's fun to think about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you sparked a question in my mind about a dense city and with things to do and all mm-hmm. that. So whenever I moved here in 2010, I kept hearing about Austin, Texas. Yeah. And for the longest time, everybody was comparing Lafayette to the next Austin, mm-hmm. Texas. I've never been to Austin, Texas. I hear a lot about it. I need to go.
Yeah.
There's a few things that I know that my wife and I would like to go to in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to that kind of, I don't know, thing where people think we're the next Austin? Like, do you believe we're the next Austin, or do you believe we are a unique city? I know you probably believe that we're a unique city on our own, and right. I believe that too. But what do you say to people comparing us to Austin? Like, I'm pretty sure you've had to have a conversation like that before.
Yes. I mean, I hear it a lot. And I think it depends on, you know, who's saying it. If it's somebody local saying that we want to be the next Austin, then that excites me from a couple different standpoints in that what Austin has is some great density. They have a great live music scene like us. They have the ability to host South by Southwest, which is a tremendous show that we go to every year and promote Lafayette. We've been doing that for many, many years. We bring our great music and food over there. And we actually are the only city that I'm aware of that has our own official showcase at South by
That's
Southwest.
Good.
But there's a lot of things about Austin that I would love to see. And then, of course, if you have somebody from the outside saying that, I think then that's pretty flattering in terms of, you know, the name recognition that a place like Austin has. And, you know, our name recognition continues to grow, but we're not on the same level as Austin, Texas. So I welcome the conversation of that anytime, because there's things that they have that I would love to have here. Now, there's other things that I would not like to have, like the traffic.
Oh, nobody wants the traffic.
We were just talking about that this past week, and it was more of an economic development type meeting, but it's taking people, you know, a long time, 2 hours to get to work, and you got companies, you know, they have a very good tech scene, like we have a growing tech scene, so there's a lot of similarities, and I welcome those kind of conversations, because for us to get to the next level, that we have to start doing some things that these major destinations are doing,
yeah.
and you know, there's a term called over tourism that people get scared about, but I'm gonna tell you, if we ever got to a point where we were talking about over-tourism, I would be thrilled, because, you know, we have a long way to go before that kind of thing would ever happen. So I think it's great. We just got back from Greenville, South Carolina with the Chamber of Commerce, and it's unbelievable what's happened over there. A city of, I think, 90,000, but we were there on a Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock in their downtown, which is just unbelievable. Thousands of people just sprawled out, eating in restaurants. Playing in the park down there, and you know that's the kind of thing that excites me. Is that's how you know you've arrived as a destination when you are as busy on a Sunday as you are on a Friday night, like for a downtown live as an example.
Yeah.
So I continue to advocate where I can for, you know, downtown growth, the urban core growth, and I define the urban core. Everybody has their own definition, but when I think of it, I think really from Holy Rosary all the way to the Horse Farm, and including the All Center and the University and the University Commons Project that we talked about, Macomb Vise, Freetown, all of those areas, Fightinville, and that is a tremendous opportunity for us. And I-49 is something else. You know, working on the Thruway every day, I personally believe that the only way the Thruway is going to get revitalized is if I-49. Comes through and done the right way. And I served some time on the Evangeline Corridor team, where we had a Tiger Grant to actually work on what the neighborhoods look like with or without the I-49. But just the ability to have I-49 from an economic standpoint, that would be huge for our business, and the ability to have growth along the corridor and the ability to redevelop. I mean, I'm gonna tell you, nothing's gonna happen. It's gonna be very hard to make tangible differences without that interstate, because now all of a sudden you take a, if the interstate comes, you take a 3-lane highway and you reduce it to one lane on the bottom, and you have, you know, landscaping, lighting, trails, all of those things that allow people to now connect to downtown, even connect past all the way up into the horse farm area. Yeah. That, you know, that could be a game changer for our area. So there's a lot of things that excite me when you talk about other cities and what can be. But going back to Greenville, the mayor said when we met over there, they didn't have a visitor until they had a project that I think it's called Falls Park, but it sort of kickstarted their downtown development. But it was very controversial, and the mayor said that they tried to run me out of town when I proposed the project, and if I tried to take it away now, they would run me out of town right now. But that sort of transformed their whole downtown. And we spent 3 days in Greenville and never got on a bus until the last day when we went to visit the BMW plant outside of Greenville. But that sort of density, and they have great performing arts center downtown. They have, you know, convention space and all those things. So, you know, those kind of things excite me as I travel and see what's possible and then come back. And I guess fortunately or unfortunately, we don't control, you know, we're a destination marketing organization, but more and more, you know, I try to get involved with what they call destination management, in that whatever happens in the destination is going to impact our ability to promote the area. We can only promote what we have. Fortunately, right, we have the best food, music, and culture anywhere in the world. I would put it up against anybody. And if we can work on our place and some of these projects that we've been talking about and the density issue, then I think the sky's the limit for us to reach our fullest potential.
You said a mouthful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of it is like right on the head, man. It's like the I-49 connector project. That's a big controversial thing because, you know, when I'm reading some of the things about the thruway and whenever that came through, it essentially divided the city to where you drive down the thruway and you see someone trying to cross the thruway. You're just like, you're looking at all like, good luck.
I'm going to tell you a quick story. I was sitting at the corner of Jefferson and the Evangeline Thruway heading to my office last week, and I saw 7 people. They looked like they were Chinese or Japanese, and I knew immediately. And so I called Ravi, the owner of the Mouton Plantation, and I said, do you have 7 or 8 Chinese or Japanese staying with you? He said, yeah. How do you know? I said, well, I just saw them crossing the thruway walking into downtown, and thankfully they made it. But And so if you think it's the thruway divided the community, and some people say that the interstate will divide it. Well, it can't get any worse, you know? And so it just amazes me that we can't all rally around that as a community, and we should be standing on the tables, you know, advocating for that project, because if you, I think it's really the only way that you're going to truly get that traffic off of the ground level to where you can start connecting some of those neighborhoods to downtown and start promoting increasing development. There's so many uncertainties right now of what's going to happen that it's a tough.
It is. You know, I think the most exciting part, this is just whenever I first moved here, something I recognized. The most exciting part for me, one of the most exciting, not the most, one of the most exciting parts is to finally see the future corridor of I-49 signs taken down, because those have been up there. Yeah. Oh. I was told they would have been up there probably before I was born.
Yeah, I have a good friend who will remain nameless, but he now refuses to sit on any meeting that talks about I-49. He said, I'm just tired of talking about it.
Yeah, because sounds like it's been a conversation forever, because those signs have been there before my time, before I can even probably develop a proper sentence.
You know, Camellia Boulevard took 50 years, so maybe I hope I-49 would only take 50. We kind of digress a little bit. But all of those things are important, and not everybody recognizes that, you know, what that would do in terms of the place and the density and the connectivity, the walkability, the horse farm I'm really excited about, I think will be a destination.
Oh, definitely.
You know, not just a park. I think it'll be a destination where people will come, you know, once it's completed. Maybe not necessarily in phase one, but once it's completed. And I think in phase one probably as well.
Phase one's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's almost done.
Yeah. All those things. I mean, that's like, again, I sit in my office and I didn't make that happen. But thank God somebody made it happen, because it allows us to continue to grow, and it's more that we can sell and promote. It's the things that people want, and that's what's interesting in what we do. What visitors are interested in is really no different than what locals are interested in, you know? And so, you know, they want to be able to bike and do all of those things that you can, that locals want to do, hopefully. And
we want to be able to do things conveniently without having our life threatened.
Yeah.
Like if we want to walk around downtown,
yeah,
we want to feel like there's a lot of places to go to, and we don't have to worry about heavy traffic. Yeah. And you know, there's a balance there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's exciting. I feel like we have some good momentum downtown.
Oh yeah, definitely.
With some of the projects happening, Anita's doing a great job down there, and so it's important for us.
Yeah, I love watching what's happening in downtown right now. I mean, some of it is also controversial with, you know, are we trying to make demand by providing supply? There's like some conversations there, but with respect to the apartment complexes happening. Yeah. But I think that I like seeing it from an architectural standpoint because it adds a little bit of a different view to that side of town, like with these newer buildings, especially with 4-5-story buildings.
Absolutely.
It adds like this feeling that you're in a more denser city that you like to visit.
Look, when people come to an area for the first time, where do you think that most of people go first? Downtown. I mean, that's where I go when I go to a new area. And so, you know, it's huge. And, you know, like you said, we don't have very many high rises downtown, but the skyline is about to get improved. Several of the new additions are, you know, 3 or 4 stories. And so all of a sudden some of these corridor entrances into downtown are getting a facelift, and I'm just really excited about it.
I'm super excited about it. I had Anita on as well a few weeks back.
Did she plug tourism like I'm plugging downtown?
Dude, look, no, she didn't, but she was all about downtown.
Right.
And, you know, she has to be. She's the downtown development CEO. But I asked her about, could we possibly see a high-rise building?
Yeah.
And she said, well, it'd be, you know, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, she said she'd love that. However, you have to start small. You have to start with the 4-foot, 5-foot buildings.
Right.
But, you know, because if you stuck a big skyscraper in the middle of Lafayette, it would look pretty weird.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it would just, the skyline would be off. But I was watching or reading an article about city skylines and what makes a city attractive.
Yeah.
And what I was looking at was saying that the days of high-rise buildings and what makes a city attractive is no longer the super tall buildings, because what that actually does is gives you this appearance of a nice, big, beautiful city.
Right.
But when you actually get to the downtown, you don't feel like you're a part of that city. You feel like you're being overwhelmed.
Right.
And so the cities that are considered the most attractive have a skyline where there's maybe 10 floors and that's it, high.
Right.
I think most of the buildings are 5 to 6 stories tall.
Right.
And
it's absolutely right. A good example of that. And some people would say that we need to stop talking about Austin and start talking about Nashville.
Yeah.
But I was in Nashville twice in the last couple of years, and they had 27 cranes in downtown Nashville just blowing up. Their stories are pretty good story. And obviously that has affected visitation in a positive way, but it's also affected business. And they do a great job capitalizing on the economic side of their music, in addition to just the live music portion of it. So Nashville is another great example of a city, I think, that, you know, it's sort of, if you build it, they will come. There's no question about it. And one of their first projects was the convention center project downtown. That was sort of a catalyst to spearhead a lot of what's going on right now. That's sort of, there's examples of that all over the country. You know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
A lot of people are mentioning Chattanooga, Tennessee as well.
Yep. Yep. And I'm thinking probably at some point that will be one of the canvas trips that One Acadiana does in the future. Because I've heard that mentioned as well, and they have the connections as well with the fiber,
nice.
I believe, as well.
Okay, well, we're starting to get on to the 40-minute mark here, so I have a couple more questions, and then we will wrap it up.
Okay.
So my next question is, whenever you get into a conversation or a spot where you're talking to visitors that come to Lafayette, what are some of the first, like, gut suggestions that you give to people? Like, if you want to experience Lafayette, like, what do you tell people that are new here?
Well, you know, we have to be politically correct sometimes because we have a large base of members and all those things. But I'll just tell you what obviously, as I mentioned earlier, people are coming for our food, our music, and our culture. So we're recommending restaurants to them all the time. We have our Eat Lafayette campaign, over 100 locally owned restaurants that participate in that. And so we'll likely refer them to one of those restaurants. We have live music, which is growing by the day. So Randall's, Prejean's, Rock and Bowl has been a great new product development, you know, for our area. Blue Moon Saloon, Artmosphere, you know, Feed and Seed, and on and on and on. And then the Living History Museums is something that's very popular. Vermilionville, Acadian Village, Tabasco is obviously very popular. And their new visitor experience has been tremendous in terms of your ability to do a self-guided tour and learn more about the history and then go into the country store and sample all types of different products, including Coca-Cola Tabasco and ice cream Tabasco. The swamps, not only the swamps, Chaffalaya Basin and air boating and swamp tours, but Lake Martin, which now offers kayaking and canoeing and quarry work. He actually offers it in German, and we have a growing international market. The state of Louisiana has actually led the country in international growth 3 out of the past 4 years, and so we're seeing that in Lafayette as well. And so that's a pretty neat thing. And then you know, there's some kind of hidden gems that I've learned about, places like Martin's Accordions, which is he makes accordions and ships them all across the world.
Is that in Scott?
It's in Scott off of Willow. But he actually does, when we bring in groups, he does a little show for them talking about the difference between Cajun and Zydeco music. And he's actually a musician, and his daughter participates in his family. And so he does a great little show. It's very popular amongst visitors. But we actually have the highest satisfaction rate amongst visitors to the state of Louisiana, which is, I think, is great. So again, to what I was saying earlier, if we can get them here, I know we have them hooked, and we just got to keep getting them here, because people fall in love with our area and our people, you know, our food, our music. Festival Acadien weekend this weekend, there'll be people from all over the world here. There's little pockets of Zydeco, I call them junkies, all over the country. And, I talk to them all the time, but there's one guy who puts on the Portland Festival, Blues Festival, and we send a booth up there, but he brings our musicians up there. But that happens at festivals all across the country. But he brings in five different times throughout the year, he brings in groups. And while they're here, all they do is dance. So they'll be dancing at the festival, they'll go dance at Blue Moon or Feed and See or La Poussière or anywhere that's playing some Cajun Zydeco music, and that happens all across all throughout the year. So it's pretty neat.
Well, I have a quick thing to mention. Mm-hmm. I went to the new organic store that just opened up. It's a chain, but it's a natural grocer's.
Yeah.
And I was talking with the store manager, and I was asking her like where she's from and all that. And she's from Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. She helps like open up new natural grocery stores throughout the area, throughout the country. But she helped start this one. She's going to be the store manager here in Lafayette. So I was like, well, why? Like, do you feel like, what do you feel like, what do you like about Lafayette? Like, mm-hmm. what is something, like, do you think Lafayette's special? Like, what is different between Lafayette and Dallas? Trying to get an idea of, like, you right. know, what she might like here, if anything. Right. And she goes, well, look, this is my first experience with Lafayette. Like, whenever I moved here closer to the beginning of the year to help open this store, mm-hmm. This is my first experience of Lafayette. I was like, I've never been here before.
Right.
And she said, the first thing I noticed was it was easier for me to breathe.
Yeah,
she
true.
Said, Dallas is so, like, the air quality is so low for her and her experience that her and her dogs just feel like they're breathing better.
Yeah.
And her dogs say, her vet was saying that the dogs in Dallas had like some kind of infections on their paw, but it was because I'm only quoting what she said. The vet said was that it's because of dirty Dallas.
Wow.
And that's why their paws were infected.
I had not heard that as a reason to visit Lafayette, but you know, it could be, a new tagline, easier to breathe.
Easier to breathe, yeah. Hey, but yeah, she loves Lafayette. I was giving her suggestions of like where to go and like where to check out. And she told me one of the things she noticed, she went to go grab a cup of coffee at one of the local stores. And when she walked in, like she was immediately greeted by not the store employees, but people hanging out in the store drinking coffee.
Right.
And they said, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, it's that hospitality that you mentioned.
It's certainly something that's special. It's unique. It's sometimes can be tough in a 30-second soundbite to describe, to put a tangible words to what we have going here. That's why it's so important that, like I said, if I can get them here, we got them. But it's a special place, and you know, it's something that it's really, you know, we continue to get better, and hopefully we continue to grow. And you know, tourism, the cultural economy is now the number two piece of our economy, and tourism is a piece of that. So, you know, people think the economy is not good right now, then imagine where we would be without tourism.
Right.
So something to think about.
Right. All right. Last question.
Yep.
Where do you hope to see Lafayette in the future?
Well, we talked a lot about it.
Yep.
You know, I dream big, and I like to make things happen quick, which doesn't always happen, but we have to continue to invest in the things that we talked about. We
yep.
have to get a full service hotel at the convention center. We have to double the convention center. We have to continue to work on our density and our growth. But so everything we talked about, I think, is my dream vision.
I'd like
to see connectivity where you can walk from downtown to the Cajun Dome Convention Center, the University Commons Project, a reality, all of those things. And that ultimately, I believe, would put Lafayette in the same conversation as, you know, these trendy cities, you know, these hip cities, you know, that people are talking about. In our industry, it's a new one every year, but, you know, places like Charleston and Louisville is really, really hot right now. And, you know, Buffalo is hot right now. And so when you start seeing those, and a lot of what triggers that hotness is everything we talked about. It wasn't the CVB going out and doing a great job. It was the infrastructure investment that happened in those communities. And now all of a sudden, you know, when you see the different meetings and trade shows that we go to, all of a sudden, these same names start coming up, and these communities that 5 years ago you would not have been going to a convention in. And so that's my dream, that's my vision. To the extent that we can advocate for that and control that, I'll continue to do the best that I can. But it will take a lot of partners. And fortunately, I'm gonna tell you the last thing I would say on that is that people don't realize our community. You know, we do work very well together. The mayor's office, Alita, One Acadiana, the university, all those partners. In other parts of the country, they're not always talking to each other. And so I'm encouraged because those relationships exist and those conversations happen, that hopefully we can move the needle on some of these things that we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I will go ahead and let anybody listening know that if you're listening live right now, please go vote tomorrow.
Yes.
It like you should have already early voted. I'm guilty. I did not early vote. I'm waiting to the election day because I wanted to make sure I get all of my facts right. I want to make sure my head's in the right spot. And I believe I have my picks. But please go vote October 12th.
And go to festivals.
And go to festival. Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of happenings this weekend. There's the Footprints Forever with Maddie Footprints, The Walk, the Festival of Cayenne, and then it's Election Day. I mean, go do all that stuff, have fun, and remember that your vote will determine the direction of the city. And if you want the direction of the city to be like what we're describing, please keep that in mind. All right, Ben, any last words?
No, thank you for having me on. I've been a big fan, and you know, I consider myself somebody in the know and pretty up on what's happening. And you scoop me a lot of times, so congratulations to you on that. But I enjoy following what y'all are doing, and thanks for having me on.
Hey, it was a pleasure, Ben.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I stay connected with you, and
yeah.
You know, look forward to maybe doing this again sometime.
Sure, I'd love to.
All right, Ben, have a good one.
You too.
All right.
For information on sponsoring the Tea Podcast by Developing Lafayette, go to our website at developinglafayette.com and click Advertise.